Hi, this is Wolfgang Bauer, author of Forge of War, Expedition to the Demon Web Pits, and a whole lot of independent games you probably don't know. You don't listen to the tome, you're a sad, sorry man.
Welcome to the Tome, episode 74. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we're going to get strategic with the Dungeons & Dragons Miniatures Starter Set. We have a report from a new contributor, Greg Diekhaus, on the first set of D&D miniatures using the second edition rules. That's second edition of D&D miniatures, which would correspond to the fourth edition of D&D with very similar and derivative rules. If you have any feedback on what you would like to see from the future D&D miniatures reports, please don't hesitate to head over to the forums at thetomeshow.com and let us know. There's about a month left for you to enter to win one of the prize packages for the Tome's Summer 2008 contest. That is, you have until the end of August 2008, in case you're listening to this from the archives of the future. Ooh, time travel. And I once again would like to thank the Tome's Summer 2008 contest sponsors, the people bringing you all of these fabulous prizes, Q Workshop, Swords Edge Publishing, Pulp Gamer, Green Ronin, Paizo Publishing, Goodman Games, Sinister Adventures, Myth Merchant Press, and High Moon Media. And the next episode will be another episode full of Origins content, which, on a side note, if you want to have something to say about which seminar or interview you want to hear next, head on over to the Tome section of the forums at thetomeshow.com. There's a poll running there that is deciding these things for me. So register at the forums and vote yourself in the poll. One last thing before we get into the meat of this episode. Our sponsor. Yay! We have another great sponsor for this episode. RPGNow.com is sponsoring this episode and the Gamers Haven Innies Special. The Innies are an annual award given to excellence in gaming products at Gen Con. Gamers Haven, another podcast that we work regularly with, annually reviews all of the information they can about the products that have been nominated and puts them on a great Innies special show so that you guys can vote from an informed place, because it's the users that make the decisions as to who wins the Innies and who doesn't. So head over to CanadianCrusaders.com to find the Gamers Haven episode for the Innie special, or you can look in the show notes at thetomeshow.com and I'll have a link to it. But RPGNow.com is sponsoring this year's Innie special, and as part of the collaboration between Gamers Haven, Fistful of Comics and Games, and The Tome, they're also sponsoring this episode. So now I will...
When we return, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to hear from the heavyweight champion of the Intercontinental Belt of Eastern Canada, Massive Defender, about the big Emmy fight coming up in August. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is supported by RPG Now, the leading source of indie role-playing games, with over 10,000 RPG titles from over 500 creators and publishers. There are new RPG treasures to discover every day at www.rpgnow.com.
Welcome back, and just as promised, I, Angry Hank, am going to take you just outside Massive Defender's locker room. There he is now! Champ! Champ! Tell us, you've got quite a decision to make in regards to the Innies. What are you going to do about it?
Well, I'll tell you something, Angry Hank. Innie mania is running wild across the world, and everybody's talking about what Massive Defender's going to do. What's Massive Defender going to do, brother? Well, I'll tell you what Massive Defender's gonna do. Massive Defender's gonna drink his milk, eat his vitamins, and listen to Gamers Haven Innie Special. That's right, Angry Hank. I'm gonna get the lowdown on all the contenders for the title. I'm gonna get all the free previews I can in these 44-inch pythons. Arrgh!
That's right, MD. It's time for the Innie Awards again, and people want to know how to vote. And now you get yourself in the ring with these products at CanadianCrusaders.com.
If you don't get your Webernet box pointering over to CanadianCrusaders.com, you'll never know how to vote in the Innie Awards, brother. And you'll never find all the links to nominated products there.
Links like the ones that easily point you to where you can buy nominated books at RPGNow.com for great prices?
You know it, brother! The Gamers Haven Indie Special at CanadianCrusaders.com is brought to you by RPGNow.com! So what you gonna do when RPG Now and the Annie Awards run wild over you? Let's get ready for Annie's! Okay, well, thanks again to RPGNow.com, a fantastic online retailer of digital game products. Not only can you find some of the Innie Award-nominated products at RPGNow.com, but you can also get some of the other great stuff over there, like monster counters. With a simple PDF, a printer, and some ink, you've just made yourself some perfect cheap miniatures for your D&D game. Well, enough of that. Time to talk to Greg about D&D miniatures. Greg?
Hi, my name is Greg Dekaus, and this is a review of the new starter set for the Dungeons & Dragons miniatures game. In this review, I'll go over some of the rules, highlight some differences between previous versions, and answer some questions that I've heard about D&D miniatures. First, let me start off with a little bit about myself. I started playing D&D back in 1981 and have been playing off and on ever since. I still have an active group that meets weekly for a 3.5 campaign. And a while back, my 12-year-old son took some interest in the game. And I had a friend that introduced us to the miniatures game, as this game was perfect for us because it presented a much simpler but fun D&D experience. The D&D starter set comes with a set of 5 figures. Unlike previous starter sets, this set, the figures come with it, are fixed and not random. The figures that come with this set are the Young Green Dragon, Dwarf Battlemaster, Wan T Swiftscale, Human Sellsword, and Elf Warlock. The figures that come with this set are very nicely painted, and are, in my opinion, better than figures in previous sets. The amount of detail work on these figures is incredible for plastic figures. I guess it only makes sense that with the launch of a new rules line, and with visible figures, because this set is packaged such that the figures are visible from the outside, that they would make them as good as possible. The starter set comes with 5 figures with complete stat cards for each figure. New rule book, 2 double-sided full-color maps, damage counters, and a 20-sided die. The rule book describes that there are 3 ways to play D&D miniatures. The first is to use the head-to-head battle rules described in the book. This is often referred to as the skirmish game. The second is to represent characters and monsters in the D&D role-playing game. And the third is to collect the figures. Each of these has their own uses, but for this review, I will concentrate on the battle rules. The rulebook for the game starts with 10 pages of introduction and step-by-step introductory battle rules. This provides players a nice way to get into the game right away, although it provides a little more than move your figure and attack, then keep rolling till one player wins. The full battle rules represent the rest of the rulebook. It starts off with rules for how to read a stat card. Each figure has its own stat card. The card has a creature's name, alignment, cost, warband faction, attack actions, armor class, defense, speed, hit points, abilities, and champion special powers. Most players of Dungeons & Dragons should be familiar with most of these terms. Some of the new ones are cost. Cost is the points it costs to add the figure to your force or warband. Most skirmish battles take place in 200-point warband fights. Defense. Defense is the new 4th edition term. Most attacks go against a creature's armor class, but some attacks can go against a creature's defense. Just like armor class, if you roll a d20 plus your attack greater than or equal to the defense, the attack hits. Only creatures that have champion powers. Champions can use these powers one or more times in a battle, and generally affect other creatures in your opponent's warband. The next section of rules covers building a warband. As I previously mentioned, most games consist of battles between 200-point warbands. The warband rules change significantly from the previous edition. Previous rules used factions of lawful good, chaotic good, lawful evil, and chaotic evil. Warband factions in this version are Borderlands, Civilization, the Underdark, and the Wild. Designers stated that one of the reasons they made this change was because they were always having to figure out how to add quote-unquote good creatures to the game and balance out the factions. They would always end up adding creatures like a Celestial Owl to the game to balance out the good creatures with the evil. When building a warband, you choose a faction, and each creature in the warband must be of that faction. Warband rules state that a warband cannot have both good and evil creatures in it, but most creatures in this version have no alignment. In the starter set, only the Wanti and the Dwarf Battlemaster are aligned, with the Wanti being evil and the Dwarf Battlemaster being good. The Elf Warlock, the Green Dragon, and the Human Sellsword are all 9 aligned. Many creatures are able to be placed in 2 or more warbands. For example, the Human Sellsword is both a Borderlands and a Civilized unit, while the Wanti Swift Scale is Civilized and Wild. I'd like to speak a little bit about the battle basics. A battle is played in rounds, and each round players make an initiative check to see who goes first. The player with the higher champion rolls 2d20, taking the highest roll. The lower one rolls a single d20. The player with the highest roll has the choice of who goes first in the first turn of the round. This is different as in the old system, a player essentially added the champion rating to a d20. Now, I haven't done the math, but it looks to me like this is a much bigger advantage than previous versions. The first player to take a turn activates a single creature, then each player takes turns activating 2 creatures. Again, this is a slight change, as you used to be able to activate 2 creatures right away. When activating creatures, generally you activate a creature and it can make a move action and an attack action. Again, very similar to what we're used to in D&D. When moving a creature, you can move a number of squares up to its speed or shift a single square. With an attack action, you can make an attack, use a special power, charge, or take another move action. Creatures have different move modes: normal, flight, phasing, and burrowing. Normal movement, a creature can move 1 square per move. Terrain can affect movement. A creature can move through an ally, but not through a space occupied by an enemy. Moving while next to an enemy provokes an opportunity attack. Flying creatures can move through non-flying enemies, are not slowed by terrain. They still cannot move through walls. They do not take opportunity attacks from adjacent non-flying creatures, except for the first square of a flying creature's movement. There, they are vulnerable to an opportunity attack. Burrowing is a special move form that is much like flying, but is underground movement. And phasing is a movement form that ignores all terrain, walls, and other creatures. A creature can always use a move action to shift. That is, move 1 clear adjacent square. Shifting does not provoke opportunity attacks. This is a new feature added to the game. The old game tended to have creatures move together and then lock together, as neither player would be willing to move and get opportunity attacks. This allowed players to do some minor movement and make the game less static, as creatures can always try to move for better positions. The game introduces the concept that a square is a square, even diagonally, so moving forward 4 and 4 diagonally is the same range. This differs from older versions in 3.5, where every other square would count as 2 movement. Next up in the game is attacking. All attacks work the same way. Make an attack roll. If the roll hits, it deals damage. Attacks may also have additional effects. When a creature takes damage, its hit points are reduced, and when hit points get to 0, the creature is destroyed and removed from the game. Bloodied is a term that is a new state a creature taking damage can enter. When a creature is reduced to half hit points, it is bloodied. Some creatures have special attacks, or special effects that they can do when attacking a creature that is bloodied. Gone from the game is morale checks. In my opinion, this is a great thing. Too many battles in the previous version were determined by one player making his or her morale roll and the other player missing his. In that version, if you failed your morale save, your creature fled from the battlefield. This set introduces icons for melee, ranged, close range, and area effect attacks. Personally, I find these icons a little confusing. I'm sure that once I get used to them, I'll not be affected this way, but at this time I keep looking at the icon and having to translate it. I just wish they had went ahead and used keywords like ranged attack or melee or area effect. Attacks roll a d20, add the creature's attack bonus and any modifiers. If the result equals or exceeds the enemy's armor class or defense, this is specified by the attack type, the attack hits and deals damage. A natural 20 is always hit and always is a critical hit, dealing double damage, and a natural 1 always misses. Melee attacks are made against creatures that are next to the figure. Ranged attacks target one or more creatures up to the listed range. Range attacks provoke opportunity attacks. Most range attacks can be made at any target in range. This differs from the old skirmish game where players had to target the nearest enemy. Close attack targets nearby groups of creatures in an area that comes out from the creature's square. These are burst effects like cones or lines. Cones bring up an interesting situation. In the game, cone templates are given, and they look normal with diagonals and just what you're typically used to seeing a cone look like. But with the rule stating that diagonals count as one movement, the cones end up with a shorter distance in the center than the squares covered on the diagonal. The situation is a little bit odd, but basically you still are used to just laying out a cone template and having it hit. Area effect attacks attack all creatures that are within the area or distance. This is the classic fireball. Again, most area effect attacks can be made with the target square being anywhere in line of sight or within range. Again, this differed from previous versions where you had to attack the nearest enemy. Charging is a form of movement. In a charge, this is a way for a creature to move and attack with the same action. Charging rules changed as you can now move and then charge, so you no longer have to start with a straight line to your target. Combat rules also cover basic forms of combat advantage and disadvantage. These situations are invisible, flanking, cover, and how the attacks are affected by these situations. These rules are fairly straightforward but hard to explain over a podcast. There are many nice pictures in the rulebook that help describe these situations and explain all the different types of advantages. Next, there are rules for opportunity attacks, and players of Dungeons & Dragons should be quite familiar with this concept. The next topic covered are effects and conditions. These explain how ongoing effects or conditions from special powers are handled. The normal duration of an effect is it lasts until the end of the affected creature's next turn. Some effects can last until the end of the round, the battle, or until a saving throw ends the effect. Saving throw works like what we have heard 4th edition will be like. A creature makes a saving throw by rolling a d20 at the end of the turn. On a 1 to 9, the effect stays. On a 10 to 19, the effect ends. And on a 20, all effects are allowed to save end. Champion powers are the final ability rules that are covered. Champions have one or more champion powers that it can use during a battle. A champion may take as many champion actions as it has a champion rating. Most champion actions cost one per action, but rules state that others may cost more. Well, what would battles be without terrain? Many different types of terrain are covered. Some terrain blocks line of sight or increases movement. Other terrain, like walls and pits, block movement. And still other terrains, like sacred circles, blood rock, affect combat, allowing critical hits to take place easier. Victory. In a typical scenario, to win the game, you must destroy your opponent's force and score 200 victory points. Maps have victory areas in them, and placing a creature in a victory area can earn you victory points. You can also earn victory points by destroying an enemy figure. You earn victory points equal to the creature's cost. The first player to accumulate 200 points wins. Included with the game are two-sided battle maps. Each of these maps are very nice and provide interesting terrain to play on. I should note that in standalone map products, these maps alone would cost nearly $15. So even if you're not going to play this new game, the starter set may be worth it to you just for the maps. The final thing in this game is a glossary. The glossary is very crunchy, as it explains every condition or rule that can be referred to by cards. Once you learn the movement basics, This is the section of rule book you will use the most. For example, what does vulnerable X mean? It means that if this creature takes damage of the stated type, increase the damage taken by X. Well, that is it for now. This has turned into a lot longer project than I thought. I skimmed through many of the rules without going into tactical implementations of the rule or the change. I think Wizards of the Coast did a great job on the rules of this version and the miniatures in the starter set. That being said, players getting into the miniatures game should really go into it with their eyes open. The single starter set is really not enough to play the game. You can play a few games, get an idea how the rules work, but generally, it's not going to last you very long. In my opinion, to get enough variety to play, you probably need at least 4 booster packs in addition to the basic game. If you really get involved, you'll start buying packs and packs and packs, so you can build theme warbands. And for these, you will need to get a whole lot more. Minimum of 10 boosters probably per set. Well, that's it for now. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and I hope to bring more information about the Dungeons of Dread set that came out, as well as future sets and what is contained within them. So if you have any questions, please send me an email to Greg Decals via The Tome Show, and Jeff will get them to me. So now I'll give it back to Jeff. Thank you very much for letting me take part in the podcast, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Well, okay. There's episode 74, D&D Miniatures Starter Set. And hey, why don't you email the show at thetomeshow@gmail.com? And if you have some thoughts on D&D miniatures, head over to the forums and let us know. I know I have some very strong personal feelings I won't be afraid to talk about over there, but only if you come onto the forums and ask. Also, you can help get the show noticed with reviews or votes on various sites, but more than that, get out there and tell people about the show. Maybe if you're an iTunes user, head over to the iTunes store, find the tome in the iTunes store, and give it a good review. Also, don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store for products discussed on this show and more. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. Those of you that are out there shopping at the Tome's Amazon store, I really appreciate it. Someday I'm hoping that the funds generated from that endeavor will pay all of the bills for the show and help me make some equipment improvements and that kind of thing. So thanks again for all of that. And don't forget to check out the show's sponsor for this episode, RPGNow.com. Links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. And this has been episode 74, D&D Miniatures Starter Set of
The Tome.